wait 5 minutes. I don't remember. Okay. Can you see something? I thought you could deal with the report on the magistrates in the meantime. Okay. Thank you, honourable members. Welcome to this meeting. We have quite a few issues to deal with again. And our expectation is also to try and finish at 1 o'clock today. Our members, the agenda is in front of you. The first item deals with the adoption of a committee report on the Magistrates Commission's progress. Our members will remember we got a briefing from the Magistrates Commission on the 4th of September. And the report, we received progress on 4 matters. And the purpose of this report is so that it can be tabled in the House. And as a committee, we considered these reports and we recommend that Council wait for the conclusion of the disciplinary process or future progress reports to further consider the matter. And that is in line with our decision at the time. So, honourable members, the report is the one pager that you have. If anyone can move for, well, are there any amendments you want to make to the document, firstly? Okay, Honourable Nicolas, move for the adoption. Second, Honourable Dodovo. Thank you, Honourable Members. Honourable Members, we'll then move on with the rest of our agenda. In terms of today's briefings, we'll actually get from our legal advisors, looking at proposed amendments in terms of the Border Management Authority Bill. We'll then go on to the IPED Amendment Bill. And the final issue the second last issue we'll deal with today is a briefing by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development in terms of written responses to the Child Justice Amendment Bill. And the final item in today's agenda deals more with a preliminary briefing by the department on the PAIA Amendment Bill. Our members, I think I don't want to waste a lot of time because, like I said, at 1 o'clock there's another meeting called by the House Chair for Chairpersons. We're expected to end going to another meeting. So in terms of the Home Affairs Border Management Authority Bill, The members will recall that in our previous meeting, the DG also had tabled in that meeting also proposed amendment to the bill, especially in terms of the agreement with SARS and the Department of Treasury. So we've requested legal advice on that amendment. And I think in terms of today's meeting, we'll get a response from legal services. But in addition to that, all members, I think in the packs that you received, there was one outstanding matter with the department as it related to the South African Police Services, and it was, as the Deputy Minister had indicated then, that they have an agreement with SAPS in terms of the border management control areas. That agreement, members should have received it as well. Okay, but I think let us just deal then with the actual proposed amendment by the Department of Home Affairs, and I think, our members, I'm not sure, I think, okay, if, maybe our advisors, you'll introduce yourselves as well, because we're not necessarily going to deal with introductions, so. Yeah, but I'm going to hand over then to Sue-Ann Isaacs. Yeah, she'll then take us through the proposed amendment. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to the Chairperson, members and colleagues. I've been requested to comment on the amendment proposed by the Department of Home Affairs to the Border Management Authority Bill. I am going to be speaking to 3 documents. I am not sure whether members have sight of the memorandum that I drafted, but it has all the comments that I am about to make. Members also need to have a copy of the proposed amendment and the bill, which is the B version of the bill.
Can you hold on 1 second? Okay. In terms of the amendment, members should have copies of that. It was emailed. I think in terms of your documents, hang on a sec, I just have to read that. All right. Can I propose, Suan, if you could maybe bear with us? In the meantime, we can deal with the copy. But I'm sure honorable members will want to have a copy of that as you speak to it. And I want to propose that we perhaps then just deal with the IPUD amendment, which also isn't a very lengthy process, and then come back to yourself, if you don't mind. And in the interim, we'll try and make copies so that members can have that document that she's going to be speaking to. Okay. All right. Then all members, we'll then deal with the IPUD amendment bill. There were, I think if members recall, the last time we met on it, we were briefed about, there were two substantive amendments to the IPUD bill. And we have Michael Prince. I think members will recall he did the presentation previously, who will actually then respond to these submissions. Michael. Let me hand over to you. Thanks.
Okay, maybe I'm audible enough for my system to be working. That's fine. Morning, Chair. As the Chair said, my name is Michael Prince. I'm from Parliament Legal Services. I've been requested to respond to legal comments that were made on the IPUD Amendment Bill. Chair, I prepared a matrix of the legal comments and my responses to it, so I'll be mostly speaking on that document. The first comment was made by the Helen Suzman Foundation. They had a comment on proposed section 6A, which can be found in clause 2 of the amendment bill. They have two comments relating to clause 6A1A and clause 6A1B. The comment is essentially the same for both paragraphs. They said that there's some ambiguity with the language of the draft, as we refer to a committee of the National Assembly. The Foundation points out that the Principal Act, the IPUD Act, defines the word committee to mean a management committee, and they feel that we need to clarify the reference to committee in that proposed section 6 capital A by adding the word the relevant committee before the word committee. Our response to that is that we feel that the wording is in fact clear, that there's no ambiguity because the sentence doesn't stop after the word committee. In fact, the sentence says the committee of the National Assembly, and so we feel that the committee is sufficiently qualified to mean a committee of the National Assembly. Should the committee feel that that the Alan Susan Foundation's recommendation should be accepted, the terms relevant committee or relevant parliamentary would have to be added in front of the word committee, and then the word of the National Assembly would then have to be deleted from that paragraph. So, but essentially it will mean the same thing. So our submission is that in fact we really speak to a parliamentary committee because it says the committee of the National Assembly. So that's our response to the Alan Susan Foundation. Like I said, they've got the same comment with regards to two clauses, two paragraphs in clause 2, paragraph 6 capital A 1, A and B. So the second comment was from IPUD. IPUD made a number of general comments. I think the most important, the legal one, is that they felt that the amendment bill will not meet constitutional muster. The other comments were policy related.
Sorry, Mr. Prince. My apologies for the interruption, and I'm sure you notice there's a lot of movement. I think members are trying to locate the document, and it's just that a lot of documents were emailed. So there's a slight confusion in terms of even the document that you presented.
Didn't see it part of the packet.
And no, it's not in the packet. I also don't have it as you're speaking to it. And my apologies. I was hoping somebody had it. But I think, some members are referring to the previous document that was sent out some time ago.
Right,
but I think your document and your responses, we don't even have that one. All members, my apologies once again on that. I would have thought we would have had that document. But my proposal once again is that, Mike, we actually make copies of that. Unfortunately, you're speaking about issues that... Mm. We need to deliberate on, and if members are not on board with what you're saying, it becomes a bit difficult to deliberate.
It was emailed on Monday, Chair, so I just don't know why it's not part of the pack.
Yeah, I don't know why either, but I was just going through because there were a lot of documents sent out, unfortunately. So, yeah.
Can
you
send it to us?
Yeah, if you can email it to us. Yeah, all of us. I think all of us, if you email it to us, we'll be able to access it.
Yeah.
I think Suyat's wondering, he might not have got your email.
I'll send it to
you. Yeah. Yeah, it's okay. Gershon's emailing it. I think you can speak again to it in a minute. Members, I think you should have received the email now. Can you please check?
When is that in the register?
We've been looking for it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm
right working. Okay, members, have you received the email?
Yes.
Michael, perhaps you can start at the beginning, please.
Three legal comments. There were a number of comments received. I think the members were taken through the comments by the constant advisor at the previous meeting. But there were three legal comments received. Well, three of the commentators made legal comments. The one was the Alan Suzman Foundation. The other one was IFLIT. And in the last comment, legal comments were received by the Western Cape Department of Community Safety. The Alan Suzman Foundation's comments, there were two, were drafting issues. It related to the wording in clause 2 of the bill that proposed to insert a new section 6A into the Principal Act. They referred to the word committee in 6A1, paragraph A. They said that the word committee there is ambiguous because the Principal Act, the IFLIT Act, defines the word committee to mean a management committee. And they say that if they read the word committee there, it could mean a management committee. Our response to that was that the term should be read in context because the sentence doesn't stop after committee, it is a committee of the National Assembly. And so it should be clear that it is not the Management Committee, but the Committee of the National Assembly that's being referred to. That was in 6A1A and in 6A3A as well. The term committee there, the same comment, and our response is the same in 6A1, in 6A 3A, the word committee is also followed by of the National Assembly. So the word committee there is also qualified. It can only be a committee of the National Assembly. And it's clear that we don't refer to the management committee that is defined in the Principal Act. The second comment was from IPET. IPET made one general legal comment and a number of policy-related comments. IPET said that the committee bill, as it's currently drafted, in its current form will not pass constitutional muster and may be declared inconsistent with the Constitution. So let me deal with the legal issue first. So members will recall from a previous briefing where I said that the Constitutional Court in the matter of McBride versus Minister of Police and another found that certain sections of the Public Service Act and the IPED regulations were inconsistent with the Constitution in as far as they were being applied to the removal of the Executive Director. That was the wording that the court used. Our submission to IPED would be that the Constitutional Court itself in that judgment provided wording that must be read in to the IPED Act. That is exactly the same wording we used to draft the committee bill. And so we feel that it would be unlikely for the Constitutional Court to find its own wording unconstitutional because we did not add anything else to the wording that was used by the Constitutional Court in drafting the amendment bill. Like I said, the other comments were general. They felt that the committee bill should go broader, that we should also deal with the appointment provisions of the Executive Director. We should include provisions dealing with the remuneration and conditions of service of the ED. And they felt that the decision in our clause 6A, whether or not to suspend it, that the Executive Director should not be made by the Minister, but rather by the committee. Chair, these are policy issues that Parliament can decide to accept, or Parliament can decide to stick to the policy parameters as contained in the committee bill. If the committee decides that it wants to go broader than the committee bill, those proposals will have to be made to the this is the 1675 bill. So the committee could propose further amendments to deal to amend the bill to also cater for the appointment of the executive director. Any proposed amendments from the committee would be referred back to the National Assembly for consideration. And we submit in this instance that the portfolio committee in the Assembly would have to request further permission from the Assembly to go broader than the mandate that was given to the committee originally to draft the bill. And any further amendments would also have to be subjected to a further public participation process. So that is the process that would have to happen if this committee makes further recommendations to amend the bill further. The last legal question or comment was from the Provincial Department of Community Safety, from the Western Cape Department. These were very technical amendments, Chair. It relates to linguistics. Maybe I should just take you through the amendments. They refer to proposed section 6A(3)(b). They said the reference there to a resolution calling for the removal of the executive director should be, and then they say it says a resolution, they said it should be the resolution. So we should replace the article with a direct article. And then they say that there's a comma in line 2 of proposed section 6A(5). That should be deleted. If you look at page 3, line 5, it reads, the Executive Director must address the request contemplated in subsection 4 to the Minister, comma, at least 6, they want that comma removed. I am not against any of these proposed amendments here. It probably will make the act a bit clear. However, as it stands, it's exactly what the proposed amendment says. As it stands now, it's exactly the same as what the department is proposing. The first comment with regards to the deletion of the article a and replacing it with the, I think from the context it is clear that which resolution we are referring to. Proper English, I suppose, would change it to a direct article and replace it with the. But I am comfortable the way the act is, the bill is drafted now, that the language is clear. This will make it more clear, but it's very technical. Those are the only legal amendments that are proposals that we received in the comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael, for that. Our members, I think maybe if there are any issues that you would want to raise for clarity in terms of these amendments, is there any addition? I think the last lot is quite technical, but I think we should be able to discuss and agree on all of these amendments. Honourable Mikalakis, any other member? Okay, let's start with you.
Thank you, Chair. There's just one question that I have, and that is, I believe the bill is silent on the parliament, and I think this was taken up in the National Assembly as well. The bill is silent on the parliamentary process that must be followed prior to the initiation of the removal process, rendering the role of the National Assembly vulnerable to abuse. That was the statement that was made. Can you just give me your comments on that statement, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I want to get this as a proper understanding from my side. The IPID, what are they saying actually? When they mean that the bill will not pass the constitutional muster, what was their expectation? Were they expecting that we must look at the whole bill and not only confine ourselves to the position of the executive director? Is that understanding correct?
Any other comment on members? Okay, I think Mr. Prince. Over to you, Mr. Prince.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, on the first question, there's no special parliamentary process envisaged in the bill. The bill envisages the normal parliamentary process to unfold, and therefore the bill speaks of a finding by a committee of the National Assembly. In this case, it's been currently the Portfolio Committee of Police, dealing with police, that was dealing with the matter. In the normal oversight process of the committee, however, a complaint or a one of those grounds will be brought to the attention of the committee. That is the process that's envisaged there. No special process, the process that is incorporated in our rules or in the National Assembly's rules will unfold. And 6A will feed into that process. So the normal committee process in the National Assembly, and 6A will simply just feed into that. That was the idea by the Portfolio Committee at the time, and that's why it drafted like that, Chair. Chair, the issue of IPIT, I don't want to speak for IPIT, but the sense was that they wanted a broader review of the Act, of the Act at the time. The Portfolio Committee in the Fifth Parliament also expressed itself on that in the report to the House to say that they would want both the Department and IPIT to do a review of the entire Act and then come to them with proposed amendments. The committee at the time expressed itself in terms of the capacity constraints that we have in Parliament to undertake such a task, and that such a task is best placed within the department to do and then to bring to the committee as an executive call for the committee to interrogate.
Okay. Are there any issues in terms of the two responses? Any follow-up, Honourable McCullough, is that you satisfied on what they do?
No, it's okay. I held the view that IPID is holding the pass because my initial expectation was that we must look at the bill in its entirety. But given the time constraints, because we are given our time, 18 months or 24 months to conclude this process, it's okay.
Okay, then honourable members, I think in terms of the responses from legal, if we look at the first one around the issue of the committee, does anyone want to express a view? The explanation is quite clear that it's a committee of the National Assembly. It can't necessarily be any other committee. Does anybody have a view around that, or we're in agreement with that? And I think that deals with the comments by the Helen Suzman Foundation. I think in terms of IFED, I think the explanations were given, so I think we're okay with that one as well. I have comments. Okay.
For me, it's just
and the final issue around the technical amendments.
Sorry, Chairperson, are we deliberating on the bill now as well, or are we going to have...
We're just deliberating on the comments.
Okay.
This is not a bill thing. I think that we'll do in the next meeting. But I just wanted everyone to be clear on the comments as well, so that we don't bypass it if there's any other issue around it. I think the final technical comments, I think, are also quite clear. Around the A to B and the comma issue. Okay. Okay, no, then thank you very much, Mr. Prince, and honourable members. I think we're done with the issue of the responses on the IFED amendments. Mr. Prince, you're free to leave anytime you wish. But thank you. Honourable members, I think we'll then go back to... Yes, yeah. Let's then go back to the Water Management Authority Bill, the response by the legal advisor to the proposed amendments. Suanne, if you can continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. The members have been passed out the memorandum that I drafted. I will be referring to the letter submitted by the Minister of Home Affairs and to the actual bill itself. So if members have a copy of the bill, the B version of the bill with them, it will assist them to understand where the proposed amendments will slot in. Another point that I want to make is that I am going to deal with the substance of the matter, and I'm not going to address the technical issues regarding the amendments. Once the committee agrees to the substance, then the consequential and the technical issues such as grammar and punctuation will be dealt with at a later stage. But the substance of the matter is the main issue under consideration. Let me start by saying that the issue of the role of the BMA with regard to SARS and the collection of customs has been a major issue from the introduction of the Border Management Authority Bill. It was an issue during the National Assembly process. It was an issue during the NCOP process in the previous parliament, and it's still a matter under consideration before this committee. Currently, the bill envisions a role for the BMA to play in the collection of revenue. So to deal with this issue, the National Assembly Committee had amended the bill in clause 5C. So the committee, the Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs, felt that they found a solution to this issue as to what role the BMA will play with regard to the collection of customs. So if you go to page 6 of the bill, and if you read clause 5C, it says the functions of the authority are to facilitate the collection of revenue within the border law enforcement area and at ports of entry. So revenue refers to your customs and any other taxes and duties. However, this didn't find acceptance amongst everyone, and therefore the previous committee had requested that there be a meeting between National Treasury and Home Affairs to come up with a solution. So if we looked at the amendment proposed by the Department of Home Affairs, it intends to insert clauses into clause 2. So if members have the bill and they can turn to clause 2 on page 5, the proposed amendment, and I will start with the first amendment. It says, currently, Clause 2 of the bill deals with the application of this Act. And currently it reads, this Act applies to the exercise by the authority of its border law enforcement functions within the border law enforcement area and ports of entry. Secondly, Clause 2.2 says that this also deals, that this Act applies outside the territory in respect of international agreements. And Clause 2.3 says this Act does not apply to the border protection functions performed by the Defence Force, and secondly, any functions regarding the Postal Service as defined by the Postal Service Act. The Department is now proposing an amendment to exclude the functions performed by SARS, and it would read, this Act does not apply to the functions performed under the customs and excise legislations and any tax act as defined in the Tax Administration Act of 2001. So my comment is that the proposed amendment seeks to exclude the Border Management Authority from performing any functions related to customs and excise and tax legislation. It is a very broad amendment, and if you get into the acts that are excluded, basically it says that BMA will not perform any functions that SARS currently performs in terms of collecting customs and tax. So it's a complete exclusion. However, as I previously indicated, the Portfolio Committee and the National Assembly had amended this act to say that the BMA will facilitate the collection of taxes. Now, it may be that the department did not deal with the consequential amendment, but as it stands, in one instance we say the BMA will not perform any functions that SARS performs. On the other hand, as it currently stands, we will say that the BMA must facilitate the collection of revenue. So it seems that these two sections these two clauses will not read to each other. Either we need to affect consequential amendments to clarify what role each will play. And in doing so, members must also be aware as to what will happen on the ground. So if we are saying the BMA will be completely excluded from performing functions that SARS performs, how will this be applied practically? So if the BMA is inspecting goods at a border and they are not allowed to now deal with any of functions performed by SARS, what will happen in actual fact? Will SARS be at the border as well to ensure that these goods have been properly declared? So we need to make sure that in any amendment that we accept, these roles are made clear as to what functions will each entity will perform. The other issue that we need to deal with is the implementation protocols. So the second part of the amendment proposed is to clause 2 again, but there's a new clause 4A and clause 4B. Firstly, from a drafting perspective, the implementation protocols are already provided for in clause 27 of the bill. So it's not necessarily correct for it to be in clause 2 because that deals with application. It's just an odd fit for it to be there. The proposed amendment says, 4A, the authority and the South African Revenue Service must, within 6 months after the commencement of this section, conclude an implementation protocol as envisaged in Section 35 of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act 2005 for mandatory coordination of customs functions within the border law enforcement area and at ports of entry. And then the proposed clause B reads, if the authority and the South African Revenue Service does not conclude the implementation protocol as required by paragraph B, the Minister of Home Affairs and the Minister of Finance must ensure that such a protocol is concluded. So if members look at clause 27 of the bill, you will see that there is already a clause that deals with implementation protocols and provides extensively for the process and how these protocols must be entered into. The proposed amendment seeks to create a different situation for SARS where SARS and the authority itself must enter into an implementation protocol, and if they don't do so, then the ministers must take over. But in terms of the current clause in the bill, there's a process where the Minister of Home Affairs must initiate a process, and there's an entire interministerial consultative committee that is being set up, so where all these issues of implementation protocols will be dealt with. So it's just that this creates a different process for SARS, and if the members feel that it is appropriate that SARS has something different, then that should be considered, but it's also already catered for in terms of clause 27, and we can tweak it according to the instructions of the committee. So in conclusion, firstly, the first issue is dealing with customs as to what role should the BMA and SARS play in the collection of revenue. That needs to be clarified, and this is a major issue that has been before the committee from the introduction of the bill. And we don't know how it's going to work, and it's going to be an issue when the bill is passed and at the implementation stage. This issue is still going to be there, and it's going to create a lot of problems if we don't know what actually is going to happen. And secondly, the implementation protocols are currently provided for in the bill, so therefore we don't necessarily need to include the clause that is suggested, but we can tweak the current clause to incorporate some of the proposals of Home Affairs. Thank you, Chairperson. Those are my comments.
Thank you, sir. Members, do you have any questions of clarity on this one? I think it's quite clear.
Yeah.
Okay. So then there are two issues. I think the second one is the simpler one. around the implementation protocols, because the Act does cover implementation protocols. I think it would also affect the FANDF in terms of some aspects of it, and it's very possible that we can include implementation protocols for SARS as well within that section. So I'm not sure if members have a view on that one, around the implementation protocols. That is clause 27, yes. Okay, the second issue, I think I'm going to take silence as consent or agreement to some extent. We're still going to deal further with the bill, but I'm just saying for now so that we can take the process forward in terms of redrafting the bill or looking at the actual amendments in the bill. Yes, we have Yolanda van Asbjørn from the State Attorney's
Thank you.
You want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I felt I just had to mention it, and sorry, my voice is gone because of the rugby. Chairperson, just with regard to the implementation protocol, I thought I would just highlight a major difference between the implementation protocol in terms of Section 35 of the Intergovernmental Framework Act, and then the one that's currently in Clause 27 in the bill. In terms of the Clause 27 implementation protocols, it authorizes organs of states to conclude implementation protocols. So it's up to them to conclude it, even though we all know that they will initially have to do that because they are working together. But then the proposal that was drafted between the two between Department of Home Affairs and SARS suggests that there must be an implementation protocol in terms of Section 35. So if we were to go with the Clause 27 as it is and somehow find a way of putting SARS in the Clause 27 process, we would first have to make sure, you know, what is SARS's feeling about this, because this is just an authorization to conclude, whilst the proposed clause seems to oblige SARS and the BMA to conclude it, and also to conclude it, I think, within 6 months or as soon as possible. So it places an obligation on those two entities. So I thought I would just highlight that, which for me was something that between the department and SARS, at least, they would have to brief the committee on the implications of the difference between those two protocols. And thank you, Chair.
Okay, now thank you for that clarity. However, I think in terms of the BMA, all implementation protocols need to be prioritized, I think, and given the same kind of preference. That would be my view. Maybe the intention, in line with what you're saying, could be that the way it would be phrased, and I think this is what Sue Ann spoke about, accommodating it within that section without losing the essence of what we want to achieve. But I think in terms of streamlining the piece of legislation, I don't think we want implementation protocols sitting somewhere else and then we have another set of implementing. But I think perhaps in light of this comment, when we recraft Section 27, obviously we would then look at the issue that you're actually raising as well. Okay. And then I think the other issue related to the bill relates to the agreement between SAFT and SAPS in terms of customs and the practical implementation of that. And perhaps our members, if I can get guidance from yourself as well on this, perhaps we would then also need some type of engagement with the Department of Treasury on Home Affairs on this matter in terms of the practical application. But the understanding is that they are currently there in the area, starts collecting customs. It would probably just require us to have an additional engagement with SARS and Home Affairs on that matter. Okay, and I think if that is okay with members,
yes, I do agree with you, Chair, that there is a need to engage the two departments, but they must realize that they are wasting time, because this matter has got to be resolved. I don't understand why are they not sorting it out for the best interests of the country. We are one government. We pursue a common objective. And in this particular instance, the difference is that SARS says, I'm the guardian of the public purse. I collect money on behalf of the state. And this one says, I'm facilitating revenue collection. And for me, this matter is straightforward if all of us, and the two departments in particular, subscribe to the view of cooperative governance, of working together and working as one single government pursuing one objective. I really, sitting here just reading this, I don't understand what could be a sticky point, because we are one thing and we pursue a common objective. Underscore, I think, yes, let us engage them. Let us find a way of bringing them here so that we must really understand what is the difference, because this matter must be sorted out. Because as we said last week, the sooner that this particular bill becomes an act and it's in place, the better for the country, given the magnitude of the crisis that we are facing. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Dodovo. So, Honourable Members, I think in the next meeting, we will engage Home Affairs and SARS on the practicalities of the amendment. And then we'll possibly then also take the process forward. I think from legal services side, okay.
Chairperson, just assist with the permission of the committee, if you mandate us maybe to, I can speak to the state law advisor, and I've already spoken to her and to the department. Everyone is amenable to maybe discussing it so we can deal with the technical issues and maybe, have just tweak the amendment to assist the committee in moving the process forward, but that if we get a mandate from the committee to do that.
I think our members will agree that that would be very helpful. Okay. No, please go ahead, and I think in the next meeting as well, you'll be back to brief us. Okay, thanks, our members. I think we're then done with the item on the Border Management Authority amendment. I can give, do members want a 5-minute break? Let's stretch before we go into the Department of Justice briefing. You want to go ahead? Okay. No, the reason I wanted a break was to allow the department to get seated. Yeah, thank you, Arnold. Thank you, honourable members. I think the deputy minister has joined us, and he progressively wants to start, which we don't mind because of our own time constraints. Deputy minister, we wanted a briefing on the department's responses to the amendments we received on the Child Justice Amendment Bill. In essence, I think there were two substantive comments that came through. But let me hand over to you without preempting what you're going to be dealing with, you being a deputy minister.
Okay. Just arrived at the right time. I was about to start. Can we move in just another? Pull up another chair. Sorry, we were told 12. So the two officials, do you want to? Can we just get another chair? Okay, let's do that. Yeah, thanks a lot. Okay, thanks. Go. Who's going to? Okay. That's yours. Sorry. and that was mine, and that, and this. Yeah, sorry, okay, the officials are here. I think they can, Henk, if you can just introduce yourself and the team. And it's starting with child justice. Let me start the presentation. I mean, effectively, look, you had a briefing on the bill when it was introduced. You put it out for public comment. You had two comments. The one from the Centre for Child Law, I don't have it in front of me, but from remember reading it, it was generally in support of the bill and in fact why the age of criminal capacity should be raised higher, but I had explained why we're going on this incremental approach. And then their submission was accommodated, or many parts of it were accommodated in the bill that was passed by the National Assembly that you've got before you. And I think you've got this page that the officials have done. It refers to the sections. The second one was then Mr. Redling Haste, which I think the officials can respond to over wanting this issue of cognitive ability. I think it was deleted from the bill. And Henk can go through the response. But just introduce yourselves first. That was Chair to try and spin things up for you. This one. Yeah. Excuse this.
Morning, Madam Chair. My name is Henk Dupree. I'm from the Department of Justice's Legislative Development section, and with me is Mr. Makudu Bente, one of my colleagues who presented one of our bills yesterday in the Portfolio Committee, and we are attending this afternoon a meeting. So Mr. Makudu Bente actually requested me to maybe just observe with your permission, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think the Deputy actually took the words from my mouth. The only technical issue was then, of course, Mr. Redlinghuis's comments that reference to cognitive ability should be retained in Section 10 of the Child Justice Act. But, of course, Section 10 deals with the responsibilities of the prosecutor in a case. And there are various factors that prosecutors can determine, but not cognitive ability, and that is why it has been removed from that provision. The Center for Child Law made various recommendations in the Portfolio Committee, and those recommendations were accepted and included into the amendment bill. I don't know, Madam Chair, honestly, there's not much more that I can say at this stage with regard to the Child Justice Amendment Bill.
Are you done?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Just a minute, Mr. Dupria.
Look, from them poor boy, don't you have enough Duprias there?
No. The Duprias are not from Limpopo.
I thought they'd settled there now.
No, and I just wanted to pronounce it. I try to pronounce things properly, but yeah, I try. But thank you for that. I think I remember the comments were quite few. And I think the presentation has been made. Are there any issues for clarity? Comments? Yes. Okay. No. Thank you for that, Deputy Minister. I think it's quite clear in terms of what has been presented. And I'm sure we'll take the process forward.
Just to say, it would be quite nice if you could approve the bill and it can be finalised in the House before you rise.
No, Deputy Minister, we here to... Deputy Minister, I think we're here to do our work, so we hope so. Thank you. I think we'll now move on to the final item on the agenda. It's a presentation on the amended PAIA bill.
Let me just start as well. If I can just start on this bill is a requirement in terms of a constitutional court case, the My Vote Counts case. There was a deadline, which I think Mr. Dupria can also give you that date, but it is earlier. I mean, it is later this year, so there's some urgency on the matter. The bill, in fact, came as to try and speed things up. Let me just say before then, we often get criticised about why we're taking so long with when the Constitutional Court finds something unconstitutional, they will give a period of 18 or 24 months for Parliament to change things. I think that there is a document which can be given to you if you want on what was done to process this since the judgment. One of the issues that caused delays was the elections. I know there was a draft of the bill that was circulated to all political parties represented in Parliament before the elections, but that was circulated to them. And I think the responses, including my own, from the parties was zero. Anyway, to try and speed the matter up because of avoiding the bureaucratic cabinet processes, we suggested it come as a committee bill from the National Assembly, which was effectively done. There was a bill published for comment, there were hearings on that bill, and then as a result of the comments, there was a revised version. Now that version is, which the committee approved last week, that version is going to the National Assembly this afternoon for approval and will then come to you. It's a Section 75 bill. As usual with, and this relates to basically party funding, Mr. Dupria can run through it. What we already have an act, which is the Funding of Political Parties? Political Party Funding Act, which Parliament was working on at the same time as this case was in court. The court felt that acknowledged that process. but felt that they were dealing with the issue particularly of paia. What you will see from the bill is basically an attempt to be consistent with the Political Party Funding Act. And if I can then just hand over to Mr. Dupriya. Chair, you had invited the chair of the NA Portfolio Committee. He told me he'd been invited here too. He's, I think, in another meeting, and I had told him I was also at that meeting. I had told him that I was leaving early, while leaving for this meeting, but I think he's still caught up, but he is intending to come.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I would just like to start off by saying and informally apologize for us being late. On the program of the committee, we were scheduled to start at 12. So the reason why I'm saying that is I don't want to create the impression that it's an all-departmental bill. The parliamentary law advisor, I spoke to her this morning. She will most probably be here at 12. Madam Chair, I hope that our little PowerPoint presentation was handed out to the members. I'm not going to go through it word by word. What I would like to indicate is that the Constitutional Court gave Parliament 18 months to correct the deficiency in the Promotion of Access to Information Act. And I'm on page 2, the second slide in of our presentation, Madam Chair.
Can I just make sure that members have the document? It's that one, yes. Just so that we can facilitate your presentation, your discussion. Okay, you may continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, the Constitutional Court...
You may continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Constitutional Court determined that PAIA, if I may call it that, is invalid to the extent of its inconsistency with the Constitution by failing to provide for the recordal preservation and reasonable disclosure of information on private funding of political parties and independent candidates. The 18-month period then on the 22nd of December. Madam Chair, I am going to take you quickly.
Sorry, can I just ask, it just suddenly occurred to me, does everybody know what PAIA is, the Promotion of Access to Information Act? Is everybody clear on that? But let me just say it's an act in terms of the Constitution which provides for access to information from government and from private bodies. The case was about My Vote Counts wanting to use that act to get information about political parties. And the court finding was that political parties were not currently covered under PAIA, so the amendments to PAIA are to provide for that. PAIA or the Access to Information Act sets out a process that you have to follow to get information, and if it gets refused, appeal processes, etc. So that's just the basics. So it's amending, adopting PAIA to allow for access to information about political parties as directed by the Constitutional Court. So we don't have much room to maneuver.
Madam Chair, the Deputy Minister actually now covered our presentation.
Oh, sorry.
except for the fourth or the last slide, Madam Chair. But
sorry.
I'm not going to speak to that.
Apologies.
I'm going to go into the bill then, if you will allow me, because the last slide actually takes us to the bill.
Sorry, on a point of order, Mr. Dupriya, perhaps the Deputy Minister should be tasked with not presenting, but at least preparing the PowerPoints from now on. I think that would be a very progressive step from your side.
Okay, you may continue, Mr. Dupriya.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this is a very short bill. The primary aim of the bill is, of course, an amendment to PAIA, but in such a manner that it dovetails with the Political Party Funding Act. So in clause 1 of our bill, we have the amendment of two existing definitions in PAHIA and then a new definition to be inserted. Now, in order to ensure that a political party is regarded as a private body, on page 3 of the bill, there is the proposed amendment to the definition of private body to include a political party. However, on page 2 of the bill, there is now, of course, a need to define what a political party is. And that definition reflects the definition of the Political Party Funding Act, except for one aspect, and that is paragraph C. A natural person who is an independent candidate is now also included in the definition of a political party. And then you'll see the proposed amendments to the definition of head of a private body is merely consequential in nature. If I may take you to page 3 then, Madam Chair, clause 2 of the bill aims to introduce a new section 52A in PAHIA. It is such a short clause, I would like to maybe read it line by line for you. The heading is recording, preservation and disclosure of records on private funding of political parties. The head of a political party must create and keep records of any donation exceeding the prescribed threshold that has been made to that political party in any given financial year and the identity of the persons or entities who made such donations. B, the head of the political party must make the records available on a quarterly basis as prescribed, and C, keep the records for a period of at least 5 years after the records concerned have been created. Now, you will note, Madam Chair, that in the proposed subsection 1, there are three technical terms being used, that of the donation, financial year, and prescribed threshold. So in sub 2, the definitions subsection, for purposes of this section, donation means a donation as defined in section 1. Financial year means financial year as defined in section 1. And prescribed threshold means the prescribed threshold contemplated in section 91A of the Political Party Funding Act. So that is now the attempt to dovetail this proposed provision then with the Political Party Funding Act. Clause 3 is merely of a technical nature, and that amends the index to PAHIA, and then Clause 4 is our short title and commencement provision, which is self-explanatory. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our members, the intent of today's briefing was just so that members get up to speed with the bill, as it is intended to be adopted by the NA this afternoon. Obviously, that would affect other processes, but for the purposes of now, are there any questions for clarity that any member wants to raise? Okay, I think we're happy. Then, honourable members, I think once the bill gets adopted in the NA, we would then put it out for public comment as a committee. Okay, if there are no objections to that, I think then we can close on this item.
Chair, I just have one question. The political party funding bill act has it been promulgated yet? And if it hasn't, well, you've indicated yes now, but my question is, if it hasn't been promulgated yet, what is the effect on this process? Because this is to bring it in line with that. Is there any effect? What's the situation there? Thank you, Chair.
Madam Chair, the Political Party Funding Act was signed by the President. It was published as Act 6 of 2018. However, the regulations to the Act has not yet been finalized. So the Act has not been implemented. But That will most probably be during the, well, I wouldn't want to say soon because I haven't followed that up, but since we will have to prepare regulations for the minister in terms of this proposed amendment, we will then of course follow in the process to the political party funding regulations, which will of course precede ours then. But the Political Party Funding Act is an act, but not yet implemented.
Maybe just to add, I mean, there is that the IEC has been, some regulations I think have been done. So there is a cut-off amount, as I understand it, of 100,000 donations. It's applying to donations of over 100,000 rand. You may have seen, if you were following it, that was in the original draft bill that was published by the National Assembly. But because that amount came from the Political Party Funding Act by regulation, what the bill refers to is now promulgated in terms of the Political Party Funding Act rather than specifying any amount. So it's that directly linked. But the IEC has been holding workshops on the other on the regulations to which political parties, I know my own, I know the DA, I'm not sure about the EFF, but I'm sure they were also there, and the IFP, I'm sure have also been there, have been participating. So the idea is basically one process, even though we've got to do this extra bill.
Thank you for that, Deputy Minister and your team. I think we are now done with this item on the agenda. Once again, honourable members, I think we also come to the end of this meeting. Thank you all for your participation, and I'm declaring this meeting closed.
Thanks very much. And I thought I was being nice and, you know, probably wouldn't.